It is March the 2nd, 2024. I'm Chris, and this is the future of photography.
The future of photography.
Back with Jeremiah and Adrian. Good, what is it? Evening. Good evening.
Good morning.
I'll take evening. Yeah, it's actually light here now, so that's quite nice.
At least we managed to meet at the right day, because a lot of software fell flat on its face on the leap day we had just a few days ago before recording this. It's just amazing how weird, how bad some programming can be.
That reminds me of the Y2K bug. What a wonderful time that was.
I was maneuvered directly into a burnout fixing things for Y2K. So not that good of a memory for me.
Okay, fair enough.
I spent Y2K in the islands around Timor.
Well, so just in far, case.
Yeah, away so from far, all technology.
Yes. Like on a beach for a month in Indonesia, like didn't
that
know
sounds
what
lovely.
Was going on. It was fantastic.
And then you come back to a world normalcy. And you find nothing. It not burning and not crashed to pieces.
Came back, everything seemed to work fine.
Technology. We deal with technology every day when we pick up a camera.
Well, I think when we pick up our phone.
Well, or when we have something, I'm trying to find a good bridge to the topic that we want to talk about here.
I'm excited about today's topic because I'm reading a book about philosophy at the moment, and I've got a line into this topic that is philosophical. So
now, was it written by a human?
So
I believe so. Yes.
Was it written by a robot? So the title already says it. We're going to talk about robots today in photography because. If we look into the developments, I mean, we've seen developments, especially around AI, with a lot of the writing thing, the ChatGPT, the picture making thing, the
recognition,
image recognition was first. So a lot of things that you would throw a picture at and it would tell you what's on it. This is now built into like my iPhone. When someone sends me a photo on an iMessage. My AirPods tell me what's on the photo. Such and such sent you a photo, and this is what it looks like.
Nice.
So descriptions come through, and it's making its way into our lives. But then one thing that is still kind of in progress right now, and there's a lot of development, is robots.
And by the way, may I just say, we all drive, three of us, a robot. On wheels, yeah. With all kinds of recognition.
More robot in the U.S., less robot over here on the other side of the pond.
We're so sad for you.
It's a regulation.
Mine's very much a beta product. Goes wrong all the time.
So anyway, robots. Robots. And the robots on wheels, robots in factories, robots are starting. There's a lot of development in the humanoid robot area.
Yeah.
A lot of AI going into that as well. So...
Yeah, we can talk about this kind of in a technical way, or we can talk about it in a philosophical, aesthetic way, because there is a piece, and we'll link to the show notes there, which is about teaching robots how to compose rule of thirds, Fibonacci sequences, all kinds of things. But can great aesthetics be taught? My instinct is you could emulate good aesthetics. And anybody who knows me knows I embrace fully auto composition or robotic creation. I love all of this and our relationship with it. But having said that, my instinct is you cannot teach original composition. You can emulate.
As in, you cannot make an AI write an original piece of work?
No, I'm not saying that because I think you can. But that's a different story once we get to AGI.
Isn't that the same
AGI.
Thing?
No. I'll give you an example. I think a few weeks ago, one of my picks was an Instagram photographer called Gangland. It was part of our unremarkable show. Yeah. It's just like kind of bland pictures. If I didn't choose him, then we should link him too. But very, very interesting, very unique. A photographer who is on my current top 10 of image makers that I always, always am fascinated by every single shot he takes. And these are just a way of seeing the mundane, the things around us, the plane. And his Twitter handle is, or X handle, or no, Instagram handle is Gangland. It's Instagram. And I'm not sure that you could teach a robot what he sees to what a robot recognizes is irony. And I use that word.
It's a difficult concept, right?
Very carefully. So there is kind of minimalist composition. We know what that is. That could be reduced to math, I believe. You could have rule of thirds, Fibonacci's, those kinds of things. Things that are seen in nature. So you can mathematically create the conditions onto which every image must follow those concepts and end up with pleasing, if not really striking, images. But it's very hard, if not impossible, to reduce irony into math. Because what is irony?
It's a very good question. You jump right into the thick of it there. So you mentioned, people trying to train robots, and going back to the very first jumping point of this article, link in the show notes, an article of somebody who is training a robot to correct its composition based upon classic rules of photography. And this is I don't know quite how to describe the robot. It's one of these sort of ones that is designed to look a little bit like a small child, right? It has a face and stuff like that. And what they've done is they've taught it to recognize what is a good composition and a bad composition. And if it finds a photograph that it can take, then it will correct. If it doesn't match up to what it thinks is a good composition, it will reposition itself to improve the composition. Very much like an actual human photographer.
And it's using its built-in camera. It's not picking up a DSLR or anything.
Yeah, which is, to be fair, if I had a built-in camera, I probably wouldn't bother to carry an extra one around. So, you'd be quite envious of that, to be fair. Hopefully it doesn't also shoot lasers out of its eyes.
It looks like it.
So,
here's a sidebar question, Adrian. Do you think they make these robots to have people feel comfortable with the design of it, hence a humanoid, more familiar thing, rather than piece of kind of, steel, rusted steel that's pure practical that just hobbles around?
Look at this. This is the Now robot, and compare that with like Atlas by Boston Dynamics, for example, which is very menacing and would probably break your arm in a blink.
Continue. It's just
this. Sorry. Sorry.
So I'm thinking, well, this is how people learn to take photos, isn't it? Right. So we learn about some of the classic techniques of composition. So, and then, of course, we apply all of our, human brain power and creative endeavor to do with that what we will. There's a question perhaps around some of the more structured formal photography compositions, which possibly apply rules a bit too rigidly, but we'll park that for now. Maybe the robot would be quite good at winning photo competitions. Who knows?
We talked about this in previous episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm thinking, for me, this is absolutely a grey area, right? Because, one of the first things I learned in photography was the rule of thirds, right? Possibly many of our listeners, that was one of the first things that they learned in photography as well.
I never learned that.
Did you not?
No, because I never studied photography. And by the way, my experience with composition and those who make a living with it, i.e. camera operators. So basically, in film, you would set the composition, move through a a dynamic or a still kind of formal of the camera. And then they'd shoot it. You could review on the monitor, et cetera. But over the course of my years, I have probably had disagreements that maybe led to one of our departures, meaning theirs, because the composition was, you know, they would clip something or something would be on the edge of frame, something that was, for me, really irksome, not minor, but irksome. And I would, you know, if it happens once or twice, you know, you just make a correction. Maybe they were off, didn't see it, whatever it is. But I found with certain camera operators, younger ones who didn't go through maybe a longer period of training, whatever it is, that they couldn't learn what it is I was looking for. Which was not complicated. It just either a clean frame or a stacked frame or long, you know, whatever it happened to be. And so I quickly learned that you cannot teach it. It's impossible. And when I've taught photography, you can't instill. You can create a sort of formalism, but it's rigid. In other words, it's like composing a jingle using, you know, AI. I mean, you could make something serviceable, but it doesn't have that that little instinct. On the other hand, when you work with camera operators who have an astounding sense innate of composition, every single frame is just a delight. And you just want to embrace them after every take because they will do things beyond and above what it is your intention was in the shot.
So I've been teaching photography for like 17 years now, and I know people who came to a workshop back then and who are still coming to workshops now. So I had a good look at the development of some people, and I find, yes, you can teach it, but it takes a long time. So at least some formal elements you can teach. Formal. But the, let's say, what I would call the originality, the genius part, that is very hard to describe and is not teachable. You can't teach
it. It's instinct.
It's a lot of instinct. And instinct in itself is a collection of like a lot of very...
10,000 years of human history, DNA, and the future perception and the present.
Back to robots. So can we teach a robot to take pictures? I'd say, in a formal way, probably. Yes, there's Gestalt theory and all sorts of things that you can bake into a large language model. It's already happening. But but the genius, the spark, the thing that makes it art, I don't think so. But that doesn't mean that it can't be useful. Like we're looking in some cases you can even trade quality for quantity. As in, let's say you have a surveillance robot that walks around all day and that takes pictures every second. That is some quantity is quality. In or can spark quality if you have the right ways to sift through the haystack, right?
Here's a question for both of you. Would you like a option on your camera that in pointing and shooting, just something very quick, would take it upon itself mathematically, mechanically, aesthetically, to adjust your composition to a formal, whatever it is programmed element. In other words, you have too much depth of field. You have too little depth of field.
Would argue that is already at least partially happening at this moment.
I think it's happening in apps, isn't it? Maybe not in cameras or maybe not in dedicated cameras. But
your smartphone will choose any picture out of like a 5-second time frame, which means it fixes your timing because it will possibly choose the one where the smile looks a bit nicer.
Well, yeah. You know, that's funny you say that, because I was at a street corner yesterday in my car looking up at a billboard, and it was for Apple phone. And there were two pictures. There was a picture, it was a kind of two images of the same baby, one with their face kind of like, and the other one like, and basically it was like, take a great baby picture with your smartphone. Like, I wasn't sure whether they would actually artificially paste that smile on that baby's face, or they would make that baby laugh.
If you look at what's happening with FaceTime, it's already correcting our gaze to
just the eyes, doesn't it?
Look in the camera, it fixes the eyes. So the live, even the live fixing is in some ways. And now it's not jerking you around and moving you a foot further to the left, because that might makes a nicer composition. But parts of that are already happening.
So we can agree. You can teach a robot to make aesthetic choices.
I think a good robot photographer would be better than a bad human one any day of the week, right? So this is why I say it's a grey area. Maybe I should qualify that and say maybe it's a sliding scale, because you know, you can go to see some photo exhibitions and you just go meh, right? So anything there's always that I could do better than that thought, right? Which possibly you guys might be able to, but as an amateur, that's possibly a little bit ambitious for me. But the fact of it is that I could well imagine that you could train a robot that was capable of movement, capable of making compositional choices to record a scene in a more aesthetically pleasing, let's say, way than a human could. But I think then there is the flash of genius to consider, right? So that and I don't know how we would teach this.
Do we need the flash of genius? That's one of the main questions. I think if we categorize photography into this is art and this is just useful photography, then that everyday utilitarian kind of photography, I think that can be taken care of by a machine.
Oh yes, I mean in surgery and traffic.
No, not even there. There's robots already that you can buy for your studio for product photography. They are available. This is where you put the handbag, and this is where you press the button, and then it goes, and a robot arm moves a camera, and the light sets it up itself.
We will save that for around. one of our picks of the week. Hint, hint.
Okay. All right. Let's do that then.
We do have that stuff already. It's there.
So
yes.
But I'm thinking more of the actual creative stuff. I mean, I have half a memory of a YouTube video I watched some years ago, and it was a photography YouTuber, and he'd always considered William Eggleston a person he really looked up to. And he actually got to go and interview him one time and spend some time with him. And they were sitting, I think, in a public park, or they went for a walk with their cameras and stuff like that. And he said to himself, this is after the fact, this video. And he's saying, I had this amazing moment, like, my hero, he spot a bin, a waste bin, right, in a public park outdoors. And went to take a photo of it, and he thought, now's my chance, right? I can capture the same photo that William Eggleston has made. And he said, and Eggleston's was brilliant, and mine was terrible.
Rubbish.
Literally of rubbish. Yeah, literally rubbish, and metaphorically rubbish as well. So, I struggle to see, because I can easily see all the stuff that, the more technical, more formal stuff and things like that, robots will get more, increasingly more mobile, they'll have increasingly better learning algorithms, blah, 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 right? But where do we get to with that spark of genius? Is that something? Are we going to get there?
Well, you can tell a robot mathematically to, when photographing mountainous landscape, always place the highest mountain in the center. You could say that. So every single image you'll have that peak in the center.
Well, that could be an art project in itself, couldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, some of them will be brilliant, some of them won't. And you could say, only photograph this with a red filter in black and white with dynamic sky contrast.
Well, okay. and then we end up with trying to find the needle in the haystack again, which only works, and which you only can automate, like 10,000 mountain pictures. You can only automate that if you know what you're looking for, what the needle is. So you have to know what you're looking for, which makes it difficult again.
Mm. Yeah, and would that be true if the robot was confronted with miniatures? Anyway, the other
edge
question
cases,
is,
yep.
But I don't think, I'll go back to what I've repeated, I do not think you could teach a robot to spot, you know, a piece of abandoned fabric on a sidewalk, you know what I mean, with the shadow crossing it. And
no, but just imagine you're having a family gathering and your service robot that, I don't know, washes the dishes and hoovers the floor, picks up a camera and takes a nice family shot, and that is just fine.
Well, by the way, weddings? That exists. They're called photo booths that people hire for parties.
Yeah, there's that.
And they're very popular. And I mean, that's, you know, we're just iterating it one step up, which is like, oh yeah, we rented a robot photographer. Face recognition. It knows everybody there.
You can get wedding photography. Here's a good example. There is a gazillion photos out there that can be used as training material. And all weddings are very similar in their photographic output, at least most of them. You have very typical photos of the bride and the groom and the cutting of the cake and the kiss and the ring and stuff. That is all. So. Obviously, a robot photographer having been trained on 25,000 weddings will be a good wedding photographer.
Yeah, sure right? will. Yeah. And make mine extra dreamy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, ironically, this is a funny bit, but many years ago when I was kind of starting out, I was an art photographer, blah, blah, blah. But some artists had hired me for very little money to photograph her wedding. And boy, was I the wrong choice, because I did like all the most bizarre, like Diane Arbus shots of her wedding. And I thought I still have the negatives. They were so funny. Of course, never spoke to me again, but the pictures were great, but you can't get a robot to do that. Maybe you can, but it would be happy accidents. In other words, you would just keep shooting and shooting.
All depends on the training data. So
yeah, that's true.
There is an Asimov story. I think it's an Asimov story. One of the short robot stories, and it is about a robot that is a sort of house servant robot, but it's very good at creating art. And its owner, a lady, has a dinner party. And this robot has built up some level of reputation in the art world and stuff like that. And one of her guests is like a robot mechanic or something. And as he's leaving at the end of the dinner party, he says, oh, by the way, I fixed your robot because I noticed it was broken. And I think it was, I can't remember if it was pitched as like a whodunit or then somebody committed some sort of crime around it or something like that. I don't know exactly that, like maybe the mechanic had been murdered or something like that, and it was a whodunit. But the point being, of course, is that the reason the robot was creative was because it had it was different from the design, right? I won't call it a defect, because the whole philosophy of the story is, was it a defect or not, right? But it had a mechanical or a real world thing that was different from its design, and therefore it was behaving differently, and therefore it was capable of creating lots of art. And I'm thinking, you know, give this little robot, you know, in our article here, right, a random number generator in its code somewhere, and see what happens.
Yeah. I've been researching robotic sculpture machines, mainly by Kyuko. And I can really see training robots to be studio assistants, you know, to clean and maintain printers, for example, or applying levels of glaze, things that are purely mechanical, even shading colors, with samples. I could see that happening, where artists are using trained robots in place of their large staffs, which, you know, traditionally a lot of these artists had, big students, and to fill in, the blanks, they would, they would be working on massive canvases, and the artists would sketch out the big picture and start to fill it in. And then the students would come and apply the kind of final detail. And, here we have,
Famous painters are known to have done that.
Especially famous painters. They had the money to run a studio.
And they had the sales to fill up that kind of award.
That's right. Or the patrons. And here in New York, there's a wonderful sculptor, Barry X. Ball.
Just imagine a photographer with a studio full of like 18 robots holding lights and moving things around. And
I would love it.
Applying makeup and stuff. That would be awesome, right?
Awesome. Love it.
Adrian's making his faces again.
No. That's not awesome.
And by the way, when they broke, you just hire another robot to come and fix them.
Well, if they are all the same, they do just another one will take over, right?
That's our future.
No. So that worries me. So it worries me in a lot of ways. But one of the things, just borrowing from my professional career, we have as a business consultant type. A lot of the way that you learn the profession or the trade, as a junior, is by being with the people that are more experienced and being with the clients, usually in the client's offices several days a week and stuff like that. And that's how you learn all of the subtleties and nuances in the thing rather than just the methods and processes. That's now gone literally overnight with the lockdowns, and it's never coming back. So, massive consultancy companies and professional services companies, be they technology based or other things, there's a real issue, which is how actually do we educate and train the next generation? If you filled your studio with robots, would that not then be a very short-termist view, and it would absolutely cut out all of the learning and experience that goes to make some of the wonderful artists that we have today?
Well, that's certainly true, but the other question, a more interesting question socially, is what do we do when the majority of the populations are unemployed? What happens then?
Oh, here comes our dystopian slant again.
it depends. In your projection, are we in a post-scarcity society where actually the reason they're out of work is because they don't need to work? Or are you talking about the interim state when we're on the way there, where possibly it is a little bit, less utopian?
I'm really talking about like, for example, McDonald's would like nothing more than to have their entire system run by robots, Amazon as well. I mean, these large companies, having humans, is a rather, annoying thing for them. They have to negotiate. They have to pay fringes. They
reasonably confident that nobody ever left a job at McDonald's thinking, oh, I wish I'd kept that.
By the way, any repetitive job that's boring is a job that is endangered by robotics.
As in wedding photographer, right?
Well, you can make that
very repetitive
argument. You can. How about children's programming writer?
I'd love to. If I was getting married again, which hopefully I will never have the need to do, I'd love to have a robot do the boring formulaic. This is the bride and the bridesmaids. This is the groom and the parents in law and blah blah blah. And then have somebody like an actual person running around just doing like fun, candid documentary stuff. That would be the soul of it.
And that person would cost as much as all the other robots together.
or you do what many people do, is you buy all the disposable cameras, hand them out to everybody. Everybody shoots all night or all day and tosses it in a bin. You process the picture, digitize it, and that's your fun album.
Sure.
All from everybody's point of view. It's a great way to work.
All right.
Anyway, I think what we're really talking about is the mechanics of photography and robots, robotics, what I call shots and bots, is something.
That's the title.
I can see that happening because these are things that can be taught. But I do not believe that you can teach a robot quirky, ironic humor. That comes out of a very weird, humanistic, synaptic, you know, just the study of comedy. What is ironic? What doesn't quite work? Uncanny Valley, all the rest of it. Those are things that are in the ether that I don't think at this point we can teach that. Now, with general artificial intelligence, where they can teach themselves things and start to have virtual experiences or experiences through humans, maybe they can learn what feels like irony. But I can't describe to you why a joke is funny. So,
Some AIs can.
I haven't seen one yet. I've seen them do a lot, but not humor.
All right. We'll have to revisit this in a few years. Maybe after the photography show, because Adrian, you will visit the photography show in the UK.
Yeah, which is in two. As we record this, it's two weeks today. I'm afraid I will not be here for recording of the show because I will be enjoying the photography.
You'll be our correspondent.
I will. I get to take my microphone and make some roving reports and stuff like that. See what's going on.
It's a lot of work. But you will bring us stories of robots doing photography.
Indeed.
There must be stuff, some technology there for sure.
They may not look like people, but you know, automated drones and stuff like that, that's all robots, isn't it?
They are photographers. All right. Let's move on to our picks of the week. I brought one that does nothing to do with robots, but a lot with photography. I'm not sure we talked about this photographer here. It is about Prokudin Gorsky. Heard of him?
Nope.
He is the first photographer who took real color photos. Some of these photos are from 1905. So he was in Russia. He developed a method that would use color filters and a large plate that could hold three photos. So he would take a red, green, and blue shot after, like in succession, and then they would be projected onto a screen with three color filters again. And the results are very mesmerizing because you know how photos are very like if you take an old black and white photo and you let's say you colorize it and you up-res it and you fix it using some software, that's already interesting. But looking at these pictures as they were taken without any later adjustments, it makes them even closer, even realer, I think. So
they're beautiful.
His photography collection is at the Library of Congress and it's public. And what you can also do is you can download some of these in their original format, as in the three red, green, and blue plates. So you can go, and I mean, honestly, if you add them up in Photoshop or something as a red, green, and blue channel, and you have to line them up, then you are already doing a bit of an interpretation because you certainly do not have the exact color filters that they had back then. But it's fun to play with that if you're a bit tech inclined. Try it out. It's cool. We'll link to that collection in the show notes. And the oldest color photos out there.
Impressive stuff.
That's
known as the trichrome process, I think, isn't it? Did he invent that?
There is a process that then makes that into actual pictures. I think he didn't make them into pictures. He only projected them, as far as I know.
It would be like a dye transfer. Ish kind of
sort of
way to do it. Yes, sort of.
Wow. So okay, interesting.
again, around 1900, that's fairly early for color photos. All right, next up is Adrian. What is this one about? The Pentax Film Project.
Yeah, so I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. So yeah, not last year anymore. Actually, I think back in late 2022, Ricoh Pentax started. We started hearing some rumors about them going to make a new film camera, and it turns out that actually there's, you know, it's not only is it true, but they're progressing it and they're partway through prototyping and things like that. So this video, which has I think as we record this was released just yesterday, is the latest vlog or update from the Pentax team about just exactly what they're trying to make. And it explains, you know, they're trying to make it, you know, for film photography, make it easy for people who've not done film photography before. And that's, you know, and they're thinking targeting young people as well. And so that's driven some of their design choices. And what this video is an update on some of their design choices. So they're now saying it's a half frame camera for two reasons. One is because actually the majority of young people today do shoot in a vertical format, you know, with their phones.
Cool.
And so they are addressing and adopting that aesthetic as their default. So a half frame camera will absolutely do that. Another reason is of course they're mindful that film is a lot more expensive now than it used to be, you know, 20 years ago when everybody was using it. So using a half frame camera means you can get double the shots on your roll of film, which means that your cost per shot is halved. So that's good as well. They talked about it being auto exposure. So it'll have auto exposure in it with a decent quality shutter and timer. They've talked about it being zone focusing with some sort of display in the viewfinder about how, yeah, what zone you're focusing in. And they also made reference, they don't say what lens it's going to have in it yet, but they said they've been inspired by an old pocket Ricoh camera from decades ago. I had to look it up. It wasn't one that I'd heard of. And it had apparently a 25 millimeter lens, which of course on a half frame is equivalent of a 50 roughly. So it's going to have a 50 mil equivalent lens.
It's fun to hear that a big camera manufacturer is looking into making a film camera.
It is.
Yeah, I like that. All right. And last but not least, let me open yours, Jeremiah.
As you were talking,
the robot.
This is basically, here you go.
So that is a commercial photography for commercials, using things that move cameras and props around, as in like food photography or flying glasses and things. Yeah.
Very simple setup. But very effective. My gut is soon to be replaced by AI, but that's another discussion. I think this is the perfect use of robots, make a pour that's absolutely, 1.2 ounces at 45 degrees.
And infinitely repeatable.
Infinitely repeatable, yes. And the light
subject to fluid dynamics, of course.
Well, that's the...
Isn't that always the same?
Yeah. No.
So the robots are here. That's what you're saying.
They are. That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So this is the studio full of robots that are doing all the manipulation of props and lighting and things that, to take a shot.
Yep.
All right. Well, there we go. Robots.
Wonder what his day rate is.
His kit hire bill is that he passes on to his clients. Yeah.
I do know that the tech YouTuber MKBHD also has a photography videography robot arm, one of these bolts or whatever they're called.
Does he?
He does. And I think he sparingly uses them, but if you see like product shots with a camera like flying over a desk with a smartphone on it, that is often done with the robot. He did an entire feature about it when he bought it a few years ago. So
I missed that one.
These YouTubers make way too much money.
Well, he does very well. I mean, he's an astonishing fella, that Marques Brownlee, isn't he? He really is. Yeah.
All right, robots and photography. I think that brings us to the end of this episode. Again, this is a topic we will revisit because it will make itself heard and seen over the next years for sure. If you look, especially if you look into that, the humanoid robot world that is kind of a bit in the next in a Cambrian explosion phase right now, there might be a photography robot coming and pick up a Fuji camera and do things. Anyway, this is it for today. You can find us online at thefutureofphotography.com, on our Discord, and we'll be back soon. Until then, everyone, take care and bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Future of Photography. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your other podcasts. Find the show notes and more information at thefutureofphotography.com.